And a very good afternoon to you. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Wednesday. On this edition of Midday Matters Health 360, we're going to be talking about dementia. And of course, we want your input, your questions, your comments, and your stories. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We'd love to hear from you this hour. Joining me in studio, Dr. Ann Moore from St. Joe Medical Group. And Dr. Moore specializes in geriatrics, among other specialties. Dr. Moore, welcome back to Midday Matters.
Thank you for having me. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about, too. So I hope we get lots of callers.
We'll dig in as deep as we can with 50 minutes to go in the hour. Also with us, Nurse Jackie McConnell, Director of Clinical Services at Lutheran Health Network Home Health. Thank you very much for being with us, Jackie McConnell.
Thank you for inviting me.
I want to start with really some of the basics, so we can try to clear up some misconceptions about dementia and things associated with it. And Dr. Moore, we'll start with you. Just tell us, what is dementia? And I know this is a difficult question, but how do folks get it?
Well, dementia is basically a symptom of a disease. It's much like someone who has a cough. Is the cough from asthma, cold, pneumonia, etc.? Dementia is a symptom of an ill brain. And it's not necessarily the physical function of the brain. It's more of the cognitive, the memory, judgment, decision-making, all of those types of things. One of the most common causes of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. And Alzheimer's is a type of dementia where people start with short-term memory loss and it progressively worsens over time. There are several different causes of dementia. Some of them are potentially reversible and some are not. Things that are reversible are things like depression. Untreated depression is one of the most common causes of treatable dementia in older adults. Things like thyroid deficiency, people who have mini strokes from cholesterol or high blood pressure that's poorly treated. So there are several different causes. There is a one of the common questions I'm asked is this a genetic thing? And there is a genetic predisposition for some types of dementia, but it's the younger onset, people who develop their memory loss in their 40s and 50s. And if you have the gene, it does not necessarily mean that you will develop dementia. Hmm. Most people who have dementia do not have this genetic predisposition.
So you mentioned that Alzheimer's probably the biggest contributor to dementia. Can you touch a little more on some of the other possible contributing factors? You mentioned genetics potentially and younger onset. What else?
The three most common that we see are Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. There is a variant called it's the multi-infarct. It's the mini strokes. People who have things like high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. So how do you get it? You get it by not taking good control of those factors in your lifestyle. So if you are a hypertensive, if you have high blood pressure, make sure you're taking your medication and you're keeping your blood pressure controlled. If you have high cholesterol, do the diet changes, the lifestyle changes, stop smoking. Those are some of the things. If you are a diabetic, make sure your blood sugar is controlled. Those will help keep your brain healthy. If you are having difficulty controlling those, get with your doctor. It's really important. As long as we can keep those things under control for the infarct, the multi-infarct dementia, we can help prevent progression. The third most common is one called Lewy body disease, and it's a type of dementia where a person is actually doing quite well, and family will come in and say they were great until about 3 or 4 months ago. Hmm. It's a fairly quick onset. It is composed of features of Parkinson's disease, where you might see some tremoring and movement mobility issues, hallucinations, especially kind of visual, warm, fuzzy. They see children or animals, and memory loss. So those are some of the three most common. People can also develop dementia from vitamin B12 deficiency. At later stages of Parkinson's disease, it's common for people to develop dementia. Vitamin B12, folate, certain infectious causes.
And we have a caller on the line I want to get to in just a moment here, but can you talk a little bit about the speed of onset as well? I know typically this isn't something you look for until somebody hits the late 50s or early 60s, maybe something like that, but talk about how fast it comes on, because I know the onset is, the speed is different depending on the person.
It is very different. And it is normal to have some cognitive loss, memory loss as we get older. It's when the memory loss starts to impair your function, your schedule, your safety, that many people will comment. So if you look at some of the data and the research that's out there, from diagnosis or onset of symptoms till death with Alzheimer's disease can be anywhere from 3 to 20 years. As you mentioned, the disease course is very different based on the person. Generally, what happens with Alzheimer's dementia is the progressive change, the rate of change that you know early on is kind of how you expect the disease to progress. So if it's a fairly kind of slow loss of memory and a loss and a decline, that generally stays throughout the disease course. If you have someone who's changing very quickly, they decline very quickly.
We're talking about dementia on this edition of Midday Matters. With us in studio, Dr. Ann Moore and Jackie McConnell from Lutheran Health Network Home Health, the Director of Clinical Services there. We hope to hear your story today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to tell us how your life has been touched by dementia, please do call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We'd love to hear from you this hour. I know a lot of folks have been touched by this. Let's open the phones here and go to Chad. Chad, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi, good to be speaking with you.
Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
I listen to the show almost every day when I can, driving to and from service calls, but it's great to have a good local program. On the topic that we're discussing, I know that some people look at this and might scoff, but I've recently switched to a holistic diet that just includes whole plant-based diet, and I cut meat and dairy out altogether. Just looking at the research that has been done by like Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, and I was curious if you two had heard of this, or maybe have heard of the documentary Forks Over Knives, and they have a lot of things that correlate, or scientific studies done that show what those things can do to our bodies long term, and what might be the effect in our brain.
There is a lot of research on dietary choices and whether or not there are certain things that tend to cause overall degeneration of the body, certain organs that may be more affected than others. I am by no way, shape, or form any type of dietitian, but I have tried to keep up with looking at dietary impact on brain health. And I have heard of Forks Over Knives, although I've not had an opportunity to review it. I do believe that there is a lot to do with inflammation and the food items that we put in our body, and whether or not it can cause inflammation of the blood vessels, of the different organs, the joints. There's a lot in the research right now looking at using coconut oil. There seems to be a type of sugar that coconut oil provides to the body that the brain is able to metabolize a little better and provide a different sugar source or energy source for the brain. So that's one of the big new items that I think we're becoming a little more aware of. Turmeric, the spice turmeric, has been shown to be protective of the brain. And some of the, there's a whole kind of culture where they talk about inflammation from food. So looking at avoiding much, like you discussed, the meat and the dairy, introducing some of the things that we know are good for your health, like berries, avoiding white potatoes, but sweet potatoes. There's a lot of information, especially on the internet, about anti-inflammatory eating. And I don't know where that's going to take us from a research standpoint. I know I have patients who introduce this into their life and they say they feel better. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Chad.
Yeah.
Oh, I have been doing it for several weeks now, and a friend of mine that's a chef who's worked for several well-known restaurants and worked his way up to a head chef and owns his own restaurant now, he's actually given up meat as well, and he kind of pushed me towards it, and I feel fantastic. And it's just, I think we think about foods in our body as being, compartmentalized, and that, you know, this one food is good for fighting cancer. But what they're trying to say in this research that was done in the China study is saying that if we look at food holistically and we eat all greens and vegetables and nothing derived from animal proteins, that it has profound effects on every aspect of our health.
And again, I don't know that there's a lot of research from a scientific standpoint done, but I do know from a quality of life and overall feeling. There is, with folic acid, there is some evidence that folic acid at a decent amount, like you could get in just over-the-counter multivitamin, is also protective for brain health and memory.
Mm-hmm. Chad, we appreciate the call and the insight. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. 800-471-9264 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. We need to take just a quick break. Conversation continues in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
About everyone knows the song Gimme Shelter, but not many people think about who's singing the backup vocal. It's Mary Clayton, one of the backup singers featured in the new documentary about backup singers, 20 Feet from Stardom. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Clayton and the film's director, Morgan Neville. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is the third leading cause of death in the U.S. It's really a group of diseases like emphysema and chronic bronchitis that make it hard to breathe. The American Lung Association says it's on the rise among women. I'm Lynn Neary. COPD, who has it and how it's treated. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
A limited number of tickets are now available for the second annual Picked by the Pros Wine Dinner, Friday, June 21st at the Bergstaff Place, presented by O'Daniel Audi Porsche. Enjoy a wine tasting followed by a gourmet 7-course meal. Tickets are $125 per person or $800 for a table of 8. Purchase online at nipr.fm or call WBOI at 452-1189.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
It's 12:21. It's Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. We're talking about dementia on this Health 360 edition of our program, and we certainly hope you'll get in touch with us this hour. How has your life been touched by dementia? Maybe you have a relative or have had a close experience with it. We want to hear your story and your questions and comments as well. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaybanners@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at @middaymatters. With me in studio for this hour of the program, Dr. Ann Moore from St. Joe Medical Group, and Jackie McConnell, Director of Clinical Services at Lutheran Health Network Home Health. And Jackie McConnell, we were talking a bit over the break about how, well, you mentioned that the brain is still kind of the final frontier when we're talking about medicine, that it's easy to tell generally what a joint does, but when you start talking about studies on the brain, it can be murky waters.
It really is. There's so much that we don't know. A lot of research that takes place, but it truly, as I was saying, I worked for a neurosurgeon, and he referred to it as the final frontier, because our body, our psyche, our movements are all controlled by this organ, and we know so little about it. And so a lot of it is trial and error.
Dr. Moore, can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, the state of the research on dementia and you know, how far we are in how far we actually are, I guess, in learning how to treat, how to prevent, just even finding out really the root causes of dementia.
Well, like Jackie said, I think it's such a huge area of research and focus, but we're not making a lot of progress in what I would consider most people would describe a satisfactory treatment or prevention for this disease. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that have been looked at over the last several years include things like a vaccine. And with the vaccine, they had to pull the trial because people ended up with encephalitis and dying. There have been some people who tried to develop a device, a shunt, that you could insert in the brain for, there was a question as to whether or not certain proteins in the fluid that surrounds the brain were contributing, whether there was a pressure issue, and that didn't really make a big difference either. When you look at medications, I think everyone's hoping for that magic pill. By the time I'm in my 60s, I want to have that pill so I don't have dementia. At this point, we have only two classes or groups of medication available on the market. And neither one of them stop the progression. They do seem to slow the progression of the disease and the decline. Mm. They're marketed under the names, the first class is Aricept, Exelon, and Razadine, and the third class is Namenda. What I've seen with my own patients who use these medications is most of the time we don't really get a big benefit other than it does seem to progress or to slow the decline. And the way I know that is there comes a point where families say, what's the point of paying for this medicine? It's expensive. When you take that medicine away, you see them decline very quickly. Hmm. So when you look at the medical part, that's one piece. The other piece that's very important to maintaining brain health is lifestyle. And that includes some of the things that Jackie deals with her homes and her families. So I'm going to kind of let her work with that.
Dementia and Alzheimer's, it's extremely difficult, particularly with the family members. The patient, in the beginning, sometimes is very frustrated because they know they should know this and they don't know why they don't know it. And so there's that level of frustration, anxiety, agitation. It takes a big toll on caregivers, family members, because just to watch your loved one go through this. And as they decline in home care, our whole goal is to keep people in their own home in a safe environment for as long as possible. And we can do that by providing, and mainly in our situations, we're dealing with the caregiver as opposed to the actual patient with the dementia. Sometimes we can provide therapies if the patient is still able to follow simple directions. We can work with physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, because sometimes the patient is having difficulties with word choices, swallowing, things like that, and a speech therapist can deal with that. Occupational therapy works with the what we call activities of daily living, dressing, bathing, and patients forget how to do that. So our caregivers, we work with coming up with plans for them on how they can help their loved one. Sometimes it's as simple as in the beginning, create memories for these people, memory books, memory tapes, have them record their memories of things that they enjoyed doing. We can also work with patients in giving them very simple tasks to do. Don't say, you know, I want you to go in the other room and do this and do that, because they can't follow those directions. They need very simple directions on to plan. The caregiver, probably the biggest thing that they can do is take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult in that they feel guilty if they try to take any time for themselves, but they have to. And if it's nothing more than 10 minutes of letting someone else watch mom while I go take a bubble bath, and that sounds very silly, but it has an absolute phenomenal result.
I want to talk a little bit more about treatment and caregivers, as well as what happens when you get to end of life with these issues as well. In the meantime, I want to first invite our listeners to join us with your questions, your comments, and your stories. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. What's been your experience with a loved one with dementia in your life? Share it with us this hour. And of course, if you'd like, we can offer anonymity if you'd like to call in and not use your name. Just let our phone screener know. I want to get back to that in just a few moments here, but I want to talk first about diagnosis. How does a medical professional diagnose somebody? How to get to this point of saying, well, yes, this person is suffering from dementia? And Dr. Moore, perhaps I'll point that to you.
Diagnosis is basically based on a history and a physical, like all medical things. So you'll have a patient. Usually I like to have family come in, because sometimes people don't recognize their own changes. And you basically take the story of the changes that you're seeing. What are they seeing? What is the timeline? What other symptoms are present? And then putting that in context of what we know about other people who've had dementia. The definitive diagnosis as the cause of dementia, dementia is pretty easy to diagnose. I mean, people come in and they tell you, I'm not remembering, and you get a pretty classic example. You rule out depression. For earlier stages or things that are a little more complex, there are psychologists who are trained in doing some neuropsychiatric testing. So they will put them through kind of standardized tests, and they can help us focus on which areas of the brain may be affected, which lobes of the brain. But definitive diagnosis really is brain biopsy, which we just absolutely do not do. There's no benefit really, and the risk is high. So you look at
you're talking about physically looking at a piece of the brain.
Correct. So it's surgical, and not very many people want to have a piece of their brain removed to look under a microscope. Mm-hmm. So we look at the story of the disease, take all of the information that we have, and look at the causes for dementia, things like, could there have been a stroke? So you do a really thorough neurologic exam. The exam and the history, you then do some lab tests and maybe some imaging. Things that are pretty standard are blood count, to make sure they're not anemic and not thinking well because their blood count is low. Tests of their sodium levels, their potassium levels. These are simple blood tests. Some of the time, some things that can cause change in memory are things like a low sodium, a magnesium that's out of balance, a calcium that's out of balance. We check a thyroid level and the vitamin levels to make sure those are okay. When you look at imaging, this would be things like a CAT scan or a CT of the brain to see if there's been a stroke or to see if there's a lot of changes that you see commonly with people who have poor circulation. you're kind of ruling out those other things. Mm-hmm. Medicare pays for PET scanning, PET scanning of the brain that gives us kind of a different picture than the other scan that's a little more dynamic. It can show some changes with blood flow, and those pictures are classic for people who have Alzheimer's disease or untreated depression. So if you have a PET scan that has certain findings, you have to still go back to, is this depression, is this Alzheimer's? Treat depression and see if it gets better.
I know we have a caller on the line to get to in just a moment, but you mentioned that different lobes, different areas of the brain can be affected by this. It's not one particular area in dementia patients?
It depends on the underlying cause of the dementia. There is a type of dementia called frontotemporal dementia. These are people who may remember that they sent that $5 check to every charity that called asking for it, but their insight in their judgment is impaired. So they knew that they sent it, they just didn't get that maybe they shouldn't be sending out all these $5 checks. So that's the little difference.
We want to invite our listeners to join us this hour, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet @middaymatters. We have a caller on the line here. Let's open the phones and go to Peter. Peter, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Good afternoon. I can barely hear you. So what I'll do is just throw out my two comments and then listen for your answers online.
All right.
The first one deals with the physiology. Before anybody, and this is directed to the doctor, has a thorough diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and part of this goes to prevention as well, they should always, shouldn't they always, have labs checked, whether it be by a psychiatrist or a primary care physician, and other tests like the PET scan or MRIs, et cetera, to rule out things before a diagnosis. Because I know sometimes they don't get all the tests done for insurance reasons or whatever. So I'd like that addressed. And the second is regarding families and support groups that we've got facilities like Parkview Behavioral Health, churches, Park Center, St. Joseph Hospital as a behavioral, and the importance, I don't think we're emphasizing enough on the services that we have here, and we richly have here for families with loved ones who, excuse me, have those problems. So I'll listen for your answer and your comments off the air, and thank you.
Peter, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Dr. Ann Moore.
I want to touch just briefly on the physiology question, because I think we just spent a little bit of time on that, and it absolutely is important to do a physical exam and to do the testing, and it is important to go speak with your family doctor if you see these changes, because some of this is treatable, is maybe not completely curable but reversible. And I'm glad you brought up the issue on support groups, because I actually had a list of them that I'm going to leave the links to their websites with Sean. One of our best resources for family support here, actually nationwide, but we have a phenomenal chapter here in Fort Wayne, is the Alzheimer's Association. They provide all kinds of information. They provide support groups. They actually have a program where a person from the Alzheimer's Association can come into your house. And if you're taking care of a loved one at home, they can kind of do a home assessment and look at interventions that can be put into place to keep your loved one at home and safe. We also have, in addition to the services at Parkview Behavioral Health and St. Joe Generations, those are more for your acute needs when people are in crisis, where you can get some professional help, and then they're also a good source of community outreach. We have some adult daycares here in town that are phenomenal. There are some great resources here in town. One of the other things I want to talk about very briefly with keeping your loved one at home and how do you support them at home and the families. Two of the big issues that drive someone to either caregiver exhaustion and or looking at long-term care placement are things like urinary incontinence, sleep-wake disturbance, and elopement risk. So I think it's important to look at how can you keep your loved one from leaving in the middle of the night. And there's available online this wonderful little product. It's a floor mat that will alarm if a person gets out of bed, and baby monitor. So I have several people who are still at home because their family members are now able to sleep, knowing that if they get out of bed in the middle of the night, they'll set the floor mat off and wake them up.
We do need to take a quick break here, but I want to talk more about caring for loved ones with dementia. And we also have a caller we'll get to after the break. Kumar, I hope you'll stay with us, and a few email questions as well. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Stay with us, back in 4 minutes.
One joke in Estonia that internet connection is one of the human rights.
The Estonian capital is ranked among the world's most tech-savvy cities with experience fighting cybercrime.
We have intrusion detection systems, we have firewalls. Yeah, we are better prepared today.
Our cities project goes to Tallinn today on All Things Considered from NPR News. This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. Police say an infant and woman are safe after they were in a Fort Wayne apartment with a man who barricaded himself inside. Officers were called to the Coventry Court apartments on the city's south side at about 3 a.m. Wednesday after a report of a domestic disturbance. The Journal-Gazette reports the police department's emergency services team surrounded the apartment because the man refused to surrender to officers and the woman and child were inside. Police spokesman Raquel Foster says the woman safely got out of the apartment during the three-hour standoff and shortly afterward entered and found the man with the infant. She says the child was not hurt. Sergeant Mark Brooks said the man appeared suicidal. Indiana lawmakers are returning to the State House to consider overriding Governor Mike Pence's veto of a local tax measure. The General Assembly plans to meet Wednesday afternoon for a one-day session, during which members will also take up technical fixes to laws they approved during their regular session that ended in late April. Pence wrote to lawmakers Monday asking them to sustain his veto of retroactively implementing local income taxes for Pulaski and Jackson counties. But Republican Senate President Pro Tem David Long and Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma are pushing for an override, saying the bill corrects a mistake by the state. Pence says the measure amounts to a tax increase. A simple majority vote of the House and Senate would override the veto. The largest solar field on a North American airport property is under construction in Indianapolis. The many acres around the runway serve as a safety barrier, but as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Alex Dierkman reports, the solar field is a way for the airport to generate some money from the land as well.
The Indiana Solar Farm is a field of thousands of perfectly aligned panels just off the exit to the Indianapolis airport property. It's one of a kind, featuring more than 44,000 panels on 75 acres of land, but that's not all. Phase two of the project is still in the works, and if it's approved, it will feature about the same amount of panels just beyond the current field. Together, they will create 25 megawatts of green energy, enough to power 2,400 homes. Kurt Schneider is a partner and vice president at Johnson Mello Solutions, one of the companies partnered with the airport on the project. He says this project is a win-win-win scenario.
The airport had land they couldn't really use because it was right above a runway, or right, and 15 feet is the height restriction, so they were only doing hay at the pertinent time. So the airport gets a long-term lease option for 30 years on the property. We win because we develop jobs and economic impact, and also the taxpayer wins as well because there's tax that will come off the roll of the actual land and have to be paid during the project.
Airport property director Eric Anderson says the solar field will be an iconic symbol as visitors come into the state.
A lot of corporations, when they come to visit, or they're thinking about relocating or expanding, part of that equation is, you know, how green is the state or the city.
Once completed, the field will create 16 to 20 permanent positions as well as ongoing operation and maintenance jobs. Construction scheduled to be completed by the fall. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Alex Dierkman in Bloomington.
A new center featuring birds of prey will open at a state lake in northeastern Indiana. Salamone Lakes Raptor Center will open to the public June 23rd at the Salamone Interpretive Center. Visitors will be able to see an American kestrel and screech owl in their new environment. Representatives from the Friends of Upper Wabash Interpretive Services Group and Upper Wabash Interpretive Services staff will be there to discuss the Raptor Center's history, progress, and future plans. The standard entrance fee of $5 per in-state vehicle and $7 per out-of-state vehicle is in effect for those who do not have an annual entrance pass. Salamone Lake is located at Andrews, about 30 miles southeast of Fort Wayne. Be on the lookout this afternoon for some hazardous weather. This afternoon, we'll have partly sunny skies with a high near 87. And later this evening, we'll see showers and thunderstorms that could be severe with damaging winds and heavy rain. You can expect a low of 67 overnight. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI and online at nipr.fm.
It's 18 minutes before 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOY. I'm Sean Beter. We're talking dementia on this Health 360 edition of our program. With me in studio, Jackie McConnell, a director of clinical services at Lutheran Health Network Home Health, and Dr. Ann Moore from St. Joe Medical Group. We hope you'll get in touch this hour, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. I know there are a lot of questions we need to get to here. Let's open up the phones and go to Kumar. Kumar, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Thank you. I'd like to pose a question to the doctor. I'm a relatively young guy. Dementia is not really on my list of diseases I should be afraid of or anything. But what preventative measures can I take to stop the onset of dementia? Are there any foods you can eat? Like, would working past a certain age stop dementia? I've been thinking that the later someone works, the less likely they will be, to get dementia because you're busy and just occupying yourself the whole time.
So I think there's a huge area of research that looks at lifestyle and choices and things that may put a person at an increased risk of developing dementia. And they are things like, if you smoke, stop. Look at what you're doing with your diet and make healthy diet choices. Kind of a heart-healthy diet is also a brain-healthy diet. Physical exercise has been linked with decreasing the likelihood of developing dementia. If you have chronic medical illnesses like blood pressure or diabetes, make sure that those are well controlled. Limit your alcohol intake. And if you are an active person, try to avoid head injury. There is evidence that early head injury can do that. And there's also information that good socialization, so being involved in groups, can also help. I haven't seen anything directly related to years of employment, but it does kind of make sense. If you are engaged and active in a social life, if your social life is work, you could potentially translate that.
I'd like to see more research onto how retirement age plays into the whole debate over dementia, don't you think?
Dr. Moore, I imagine you would too.
I would, but I don't know what you do for a living, Kumar, but there you go. There's a job for you. You can do that research for us.
Kumar, we appreciate the call and the question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. We have a few more questions we'd like to get to here before we take another break. Jim wrote in. Jim says, when a parent is hospitalized with dementia and doesn't remember you, is there some kind of benefit that would encourage continued visits?
Well, one of the things that I think Jim may be describing is something we call delirium. Delirium is kind of a very sudden, quick change in baseline cognition. And it happens when someone who already has a brain that's kind of fragile experiences change. So usually when you're hospitalized, you are ill. You've had a change in environment, the people around you, your routine, medications, things that can trigger delirium are like an infection. Bladder infections are pretty common to do that. Heart attack, stroke, all of those things can cause that sudden kind of change where they may not remember you. Things that are helpful in managing delirium, whether it be in the hospital or at home, are as much as possible trying to keep interruptions limited. So in the hospitals, I do something called a sleep protocol, where unless my patient is calling the nurse or having issues, the nurses don't go in at 3 a.m. to wake them up and see how they're doing. Limit medication changes, provide as much familiarity as they can. There are some medications that can kind of help with some of this delirium, but we try not to use medicine if we don't have to.
We have one more question before we take a quick break here. Anita wrote in. Anita says, I heard an interesting perspective from a daughter of a woman with dementia. Each and every day, her mother was suffering from an enormous amount of anxiety being surrounded by objects like photographs that reminded her on a daily basis how many memories she was losing. The daughter eventually removed these objects from her mother's environment. She stopped letting their conversations focus on correcting her mother when she said something incorrect and just enjoyed their time together. After this, her mother was much happier and their time together was more positive. And Jackie McConnell, we were talking a little bit about this over the break here. It can be a lot about removing triggers from a patient's environment.
Correct. And the triggers can vary because for some patients, it's very calming to be able to be surrounded by those familiar objects. Others, it just instills that anxiety. And anxiety is one of the symptoms that we see at home quite frequently. Anxiety, behavioral changes. People who were very soft-spoken now are very agitated. And so you have to look at what's causing that. Are they picking at their clothes? Maybe they need to go to the bathroom, but they don't know how to say that anymore. Are they looking at pictures, just becoming extremely frustrated? So you have to find the triggers. And then one of the other things is to have a routine for these patients. Because mama wants to sleep all day doesn't mean that mama should sleep all day. So you need to have a pattern of that they get up at a certain time, that they know that, and so that they know that it's time to eat. Nutrition is very important in the home with our demented patients because sometimes they forget that they're hungry even. And that sounds kind of ridiculous, but it's true. And so we need to really focus on what kind of foods are they feeding that patient. And those are the things that in home care we focus on. Advanced directives, what are you going to do in the future? Being able to not only care for that loved one, but caring for yourself at the same time. And we talked briefly on some safety issues, and that's another thing too.
And we'll tackle those issues after our break here. We hope you'll get in touch. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet, or call 800-471-9264. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Just about everyone knows the song Gimme Shelter, but not many people think about who's singing the backup vocal. It's Mary Clayton, one of the backup singers featured in the new documentary about backup singers, 20 Feet from Stardom. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Clayton and the film's director, Morgan Neville. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Lawmakers take up immigration on the Hill. Senate candidates are set in New Jersey. Virginia voters head to the polls. And Congress takes sides in the Edward Snowden leak case. I'm Lynn Neary. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us. Plus, our political speechwriting duo Paul Glastris and Peter Robinson are back. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
We have one joke in Estonia that internet connection is one of the human rights.
The Estonian capital is ranked among the world's most tech-savvy cities with experience fighting cybercrime.
We have intrusion detection systems, we have firewalls. Yeah, we are better prepared today.
Our cities project goes to Tallinn today on All Things Considered from NPR News. This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Dr. Ann Morin, Jackie McConnell, Director of Clinical Services at Lutheran Health Network Home Health. We're talking this hour about dementia, and we hope you'll get in touch. 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Jackie McConnell, I want to turn to you, and we've been talking a little bit about this, but I want to talk further. When a family receives the news that that a family member, a mother, a father, aunt, uncle, has received this diagnosis, they've suffered from dementia, what should the family's next steps be in terms of taking good care of this person? What resources are available for them to consult?
Well, as Dr. Moore was saying, that there are a lot of support systems in our community, and we're very blessed with that. But it is, once you've got that diagnosis, you have to come up with, how am I going to deal with that? Who's going to be able to help me? Because unfortunately, it's not something that's going to get better. It's a progressive worsening of a condition. And so it's coming up with, do I talk to family members? Do I get support from the community with the Alzheimer's groups? Through aging and in-home services, do I get hooked up with them with some respite care so that as a caregiver, I can feel confident in leaving my loved one? Is it that I get support from my church, that there are volunteers through a lot of the church services that will come? There are companies that provide, unfortunately, most of those are not covered under any kind of an insurance plan, so it's more of a private pay type of thing. But there are home care agencies that are out there that provide that care when family members are not available to do it. So coming up with the support and then making a plan of what you're going to do as this progresses down the road.
And so it's not just managing the lifestyle or the environment, making sure you take care of yourself, but you also have to have some very difficult conversations about end of life care, about how the patient wants to be treated in this process.
Not just that, but also who's going to handle your money? Who's going to make those decisions for you? Are you going to stay in your own home and have people come in and care for you, or do you want to go into like an assisted living and then progress into a skilled nursing facility as the time arose? You know, those are conversations that are extremely difficult for adult children to have with their parents, because as an adult child, you know, your parents are bulletproof. They are, you know, they're infallible. And to be able to have to look at that there is a mortality with us is extremely difficult to do. And some people have a very difficult time doing that. That's where those support groups, the outside agencies can come in and help. And, in home care, we have social worker who can come in and kind of help facilitate those things. But it's a lot of planning.
And planning during a very difficult time as well.
And that's why it needs to be done as early as possible.
And before hopefully a diagnosis even takes place.
Well, either before that or in the early stages of it, where the patient actually has input into what they want to do. And that they're still capable of doing that, that they're cognitive enough to make those decisions. And so, you know, advanced directives, put it in writing. Who do you want to be your medical representative when I can't say what I want done medically anymore? Or what? Who's, again, financial POAs, things along that line.
Just about 3 minutes left in the program here, Dr. Ann Moore. What are some final thoughts on you know, this issue, on what folks should be looking for, either in themselves or maybe with family members to try to get to a diagnosis or as early as possible?
Well, I think it is important to get to a diagnosis as early as possible because, as we discussed, some of these things are potentially treatable. If you catch them early enough, you don't have much damage. So if you notice some changes in your loved one having the same conversation or repetition of comments or questions, make an appointment with your physician, with their physician. Get them in for a medical evaluation so that we can address treatable causes early. If you do get a diagnosis of dementia, as Jackie said, get that support, get that information. This is not a disease that we have a treatment for, so it's going to be coming up with a plan for keeping that person safe and healthy and happy. And then do make a plan. And one of the things that Jackie didn't touch on, but dementia, Alzheimer's dementia, is a terminal diagnosis. We don't have a cure for this. It is a progressive decline. And so you will see an overall loss of function. At the very end stages, people lose their ability to swallow. And one of the issues that comes up is now that they can't swallow, how do we keep their nutrition and hydration? So feeding tubes become a big issue, and that's important for you to talk with your loved ones about.
Because that's a pretty invasive procedure. It's not something that everybody would want done at end of life.
Correct, and it doesn't necessarily impact quality of life. It may extend the living or prolong the dying without providing really much of a benefit. Jackie commented earlier, people sometimes forget to eat. They're not hungry. That sensation goes away. And so that's one of the issues that we face.
And that's where the advanced directives, when the patient is cognitive, you know, as an older adult, and I'm in that 60-year-old bracket, having a plan and letting my loved ones know that if and when that time comes, this is what I do or don't want done. You know, I want everything done, or I don't want anything to prolong. And again, that's something that needs to be done while that patient can participate, because even with dementia, they can still have a quality of life. Maybe it's just to be able to see those children laughing. That's enough for them.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave the conversation there for today. But Dr. Ann Moore, thank you very much for being with us on Midday Matters today.
Thank you for having me.
And Jackie McConnell, Director of Clinical Services at Lutheran Health Network Home Health, we appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who's listening, everybody who called in and left their thoughts with us. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Stay with us. Fresh Air is coming up next. It's 1 o'clock.